Succession number 29956, Reel 8.
Hetty Bauer, Reel 8. Hetty, you must have met some very interesting people in your piecework and your work with the Labour Party. Are there any sort of outstanding people you'd like to talk about or that you remember particularly?
Well, I've already mentioned what a wonderful orator James Maxton was, the ILP Clydesider, and quite an interesting character, a very, very witty person.
You've mentioned Bertrand Russell and Dora Russell. Did you?
Yes.
Did you meet them?
Met them again. It would have been either meetings of the Fabian Society or at lectures given, which were open to the public, and Bertrand Russell could have a very scathing, satirical humour to some of his speeches. He had also great moral strength in a way in which he was quite prepared to take on the establishment and point out its hypocrisy between its pretensions or aspirations to being taking highly moral judgments, but in fact doing what was, in his opinion, highly immoral actions, because he regarded war, as I do now, as an immoral thing. I think his anti-war feelings were very, very, held very strongly.
You mentioned Haldane.
Now, I remember a lecture at which Professor Haldane was the speaker. It was soon after his return from his first visit to the Soviet Union, and before he began to question the theory that Lysenko, you know, which was the genetics, we'll leave that. It was long before then. But he was talking about scientific man, because the Soviet Union was very keen on its scientists, and he was on about, you know, that science was of great importance, and that our schools had to take science more seriously. It was at a time when most students were still opting on the whole for the humanities, and science was a poor relation, physics and chemistry and biology. And I think that was what he was making a plea for, that we had to be taken, that science was going to be of extreme importance. And then when questions and discussion took place, Bernard Shaw on the platform got up and said he was puzzled by this creature, scientific man, what it embodied. Was he, for instance, a scientific man? And wanted Haldane to answer him, because he was up, questions and answers. Haldane stood up and said, "My dear friend, you are a great playwright, and one can't be everything in this world." So you tell me whether he answered Bernard Shaw's question. I knew personally and very, very well Jacob Bronowski, who wrote and produced and took part in his Ascent of Man, the television series. He was a refugee to England with his parents and sister and brother. Very soon after World War One, I think they probably came to England about 1920-21. I do not remember the exact year, but I knew him as a young schoolboy. He was 2 years my junior. His mother was became a great friend of my beloved eldest sister. And they lived in North Hackney, what is now known as Stamford Hill. And he was a whole man in that he was a man of letters. He wrote a book on Blake. He wrote poetry. And he was a scientist. He wrote 4 small poems at the time of the Spanish Civil War, of which I have a copy. At the time of Guernica, was one of the Spanish poets that was killed in Spain, and he wrote a very fine poem on him. He was with the group of scientists that went out after the atom bomb was dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, you know, and the scientists were going out to see what the devastation. He was a very sensitive person.
Do you think the people in the period after World War II, you know, the anti-nuclear leaders, were they of the same standard as the earlier ones, do you think? You know, did you find that there were inspirational leaders in CND and I know Bertrand Russell was very prominent.
Yes,
wasn't
yes,
he?
Yes. I wish I could recall, because it was a combination of shocked horror that this could have happened after the Japanese were suing for peace. There was no reason for those bombs to have been dropped, except for experiment. That was one of the wickedest crimes, I think, committed. And
do you want to sit on that chair?
At my age now, it's difficult to think of what I was like in 1945. Beyond the shock, the horror, and the wickedness of it.
Do you want to sit on
I'll
that
have
chair?
To come change because, where I'm
yes,
sitting.
I think so.
So that I don't have the sun in my
yes,
eyes.
That's,
oh,
that
that's better.
Yes, I was getting worried
yes,
about
that,
you.
That's
yes.
fine. Now I haven't got it at all.
Yes. Yes, and I suppose you became involved, did you, in CND? And the
I joined our local CND branch and the national body. You know, you sent your subscription to head office, and then if you were with a group locally, you sent a subscription to your local group. Well, we had a very strong CND group in Muswell Hill, and we had some very fine artists and we have a lovely, lovely banner, which they've, of course, a lot of the people who were active when CND first started are no longer with us. I now march with the main CND as near the front as possible, because for instance, last Saturday, was it, when we marched, as soon as we arrived in Trafalgar Square, my daughters and I slipped away, because although the walk was only about 2 miles and there wasn't a lot of stop start, nevertheless, I was quite tired at the end of it. Although it was, you know, we kept up a fairly good pace. It, in the earlier anti-Iraq war demonstration, there was so much stopping and standing in one place tired me far more than walking. And we walked at quite a good pace. But I realised I was going to be tired, and I had another engagement in the evening.
Oh, yes, you told me.
I think I mentioned. So we slipped away quite soon after arriving. I didn't even hear any of the speeches. Kate Hudson was speaking as we arrived at Trafalgar Square. But I don't know, apart from Ken Livingstone, I don't know who the other speakers were even. So,
yes. Do you think these marches, you've been on so many marches, I understand, haven't you?
I was so anti-Iraq war, I marched on all of them. The very first one, I wondered whether I would be able to do it, because it was so many years since I'd been on a demonstration. And my younger daughter had a folding chair in a bag, like a golfer's outfit, which she had on her shoulder, and a rucksack, and she wouldn't let me even carry the rucksack. And I think on that occasion we were marching from Trafalgar, on the first demo, I think it was from the square to Hyde Park. I only know that at a certain point in Piccadilly, I said to Margaret, I feel rather weak, and I knew she had a flask with her, and some tea bags and a flask of boiling water. I said, I think if I had a cup of tea and a barley sugar, sweet, it would be okay. And we dropped out of the march, and I have an idea that it was somewhere near the railings, which in 1926 the police had, on horseback, had tried to pin us so that we had nowhere to run at the back, because it was the railings of private houses in Piccadilly. But that may be just my imagination. Only I can remember that in the Iraq war, the police behaved honourably. They didn't hassle us and were there just to see that there was no untoward incident. But you had a feeling that they had a sneaking sympathy with us. I don't know whether that's of any value.
Was that very different behaviour? Would that behaviour have been very different from other police behaviour you'd experienced?
To me, yes, and I don't think it was purely my imagination. So, but I mean that. I can't state any facts about it. But on one occasion, we were meeting in Gower Street. We, Margaret, my younger daughter, because Celia was always walking with her World Disarmament Campaign. Margaret now walked with CND. We'd gone to the square, the Bloomsbury squares, and to have a snack. And then it was getting near the time for the march to start. So Margaret went up to a couple of policemen. She said the tall one was very handsome. I can't see all that. And said, "Do you mind telling me whether the march is coming up Gower Street and turning round here?" He said, "Madam, you have to go out and walk to the end of Gower Street and join the march there." She said, "My 97-year-old, as I would have been there, 97 or 98, whatever it was, mother, wants to conserve her energy, and therefore she would like to wait here and join the march as it reaches her, rather than expend energy walking right to the end of Gower Street." So he was quiet for a moment, and then she said, "Yes, the march is coming up here and turning round this corner. You will be able to join it." And then he turned to me, "And, young lady, I don't want any trouble from you." Me, with a broad smile, which I replied to with a broad smile. And I said to Margaret, "My goodness, this is different from what it used to be."
Have you experienced some rough policing? Have you experienced some really different sort of policing?
Yes, in the earlier days, at the time of the miners' lockout, certainly. And of the early Pat Mosley years, after there were demonstrations at the time, after Cable Street.
Did you ever go on the Aldermaston marches?
Oh, yes. And we went to Greenham Common, to the women, peace women at Greenham Common. They were a courageous, really courageous. And, I felt great admiration for them. Because it wasn't a bed of roses to sleep in the makeshift tents that they had, and to start with, the conditions were fairly primitive that they were living under and cooking under. I don't know if you ever saw the article written by Martha Gellhorn about them. Did you know the American writer? Woman journalist.
Oh, yes.
She was married to Hemingway for a time.
That's right.
Well, she wrote an article in The Guardian, a tribute, I think it was The Guardian, not The New Statesman, to the women of Greenham Common. And there was a commemoration, was it last year? Well, now, I wasn't in London. I was on holiday out of London. And couldn't come back to take part in it. So I phoned a friend of mine, Lucy Craig, who was a Labour councillor in Haringey, but Blair got her expelled. I said, "If someone has a copy of Martha Gellhorn's article, it should be read." I'll keep forgetting to ask Lucy whether anybody did read it there, because my Margaret had kept a copy of the article. It was a great tribute to the women.
Did you stay there at all, or did you visit just for the day?
Well, at Aldermaston.
At Greenham.
Yes, I didn't go and sleep, lying on the floor on churches, no. We went out for the day, and then somebody had come with cars to meet us, and we went back. And then the following day, I think we went further afield. I never stayed overnight with the marchers because I thought I was a little too old for that. I think Margaret did.
Now you see there were
quite a number of those marches, and it's now all jumbled together. I was still working at the time. Yes, because I was a school secretary after the war, when my job as warden had all finished. I wanted a job that would give me the same hours and weeks of work as my young children, because Margaret had no recollection of her father before the war, and we had to become a family unit again. So I thought of what could I do that would be part-time working, the equivalent of part-time working. And because of my wartime job, I knew the education, what were they called, attached to the council. It wasn't Haringey, it was Hornsey Borough Council. Before the GLC was born, we were a borough of Hornsey, a borough of Wood Green, a borough of Tottenham, with several MPs for Tottenham. And we lived in the borough of Hornsey. So I went to see Dr. Brettle, and it was, education was beginning to be of importance in 1945 with the first Labour government. And he said, what about a school secretary? And that sounded just what I'd like to do. And so he sent me to a school near Finsbury Park in our borough, and the school secretary that had been appointed was going to take a teacher's training course, and so there would be a vacancy there within a month. And that was all during, I know it was while I was 20 years at school secretary.
And retired
in 1967 when I was 62 years old.
And all the time you were doing these marches, while you were working?
Yes, it was because the Aldermaston marches started while I was still working. Yeah. Mm. My headmaster was a bit amazed, I think.
Do you think you achieved anything with your protests and marching, first of all against nuclear weapons?
Oh, I think we made people aware. Yes, I do think we made people aware. People know what you mean when you talk about the CND. They're not so sure, but they know of the offshoots. Musicians against nuclear arms. Well, I've been a member of MANA. Now, Margie's, she said, Mum, there's no need really for you to rejoin as a full member because I get your tickets anyway. And that's the one thing that I do go out to late at night. They hold about 5, maybe 6 concerts a year. Not the there was one in the early in February in a church very near Baker Street, and it was not difficult to park there, so we went by car. But I have been on public transport to St James Piccadilly because you can't park there. And all one of the concerts was always held at St James Church, the Peace Church, as it's known as. And One is held at Lauderdale House, which is on Highgate Hill, where Waterlow Park is.
Ever get despondent, though? You know, the fact that you were explaining about the awfulness of the war in Iraq today.
Yeah.
And, the fact that war is, despite all this protest and anti-war activity, that war is still going on and people are still killing each other. Do you ever feel that, you know, it's been wasted effort?
Oh, no. 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 Well, when I say no, maybe if a particular bit of news comes over which really depresses me, you know, a suicide bomber attacked and so many people were killed, including young children, that, you know, you react to that and you think, oh dear, yet again, you know, when is it going to end? So for a time, yes, I'm depressed and I think, oh, when is it going to end? And but then I feel hope springs eternal. If you didn't have some hope for humanity, well, you just might as well shut yourself up and turn your back on the world. And I don't think that would achieve anything anyways. And it would distress my daughters. Look, I know that Celia and Margaret not only love me, but they admire me because they never stop talking about that. And if it gives them a stimulus to continue working for a peaceful world, that is what gives me satisfaction. And I'm doing what I can do. My legs are good. My eyes aren't, my ears aren't. But
well, you look fantastic, Hetty. And thank you very much indeed.
That's nothing that I do. I don't do anything to, not consciously, to make me what I am. I mean, I don't do anything to make my legs sturdy, but they are sturdy and they can do this.
I can see, you know, and you look as fit as a fiddle. And
yes, well,
101, I can still see you sort of marching way into the future.
Margaret insisted that I went across the road to our group surgery. And my doctor is a lovely woman. And I said, I've come here, Dr. Robertson, to waste your time because my daughter wants you to test my pulse, test my heart, and make certain that I'm not going to faint on the walk. She said, oh, you're walking on this. What's the last mile? Are you walking? And I said, well, it's the least I can do. So I had an examination. Heart functioning perfectly, pulse and blood pressure. She said, you're just incredible. And my doctor using that word. I'm used to people saying that, but this is my doctor. You really are incredible.
Well, keep marching. And thank you very much indeed, Hetty. I do appreciate the time you've spared for me today, and I'm sure you've cut down on your usual rest, and I do appreciate it. Thank you.
And listening to my Henry James book.
Oh, yes.
But anyway, he can wait.
Oh, right.